Hello and welcome to Prince George Sexual Assault Center Voices. This is a podcast where we want to break down barriers, address stigmas, and talk about all things related to sexual and gender-based violence.
We are recording today on the traditional unceded territory of the Kla'itlé Tene people, where we are uninvited guests who live, work, and play here.
Good day, my friends. Today we're a little bit different. Linnell is out for some work events, so I'm recording with one of my very special workmates and friends, Shereel.
Hello, everybody.
Shereel, do you want to introduce yourself just quick for our folks and let them know who you are and how you came to be with us at the center?
Sure. So about a year ago, I started at the center. I started out as the Northern Indigenous Outreach Worker, which I am still doing, but also taking on the role of clinic coordinator.
Right. And the clinic is our sexual assault clinic for those of you who might be listening for the first time, which we're going to get into later on in this episode. But before we start, you may or may not know. Well, you do know because you've listened to all the episodes. I like to start out with an icebreaker question since it kind of warms us up to talking in the mics because we haven't done it in a while. Right. So I got one here. Just got to make sure would you rather speak all languages or be able to talk with animals?
Talk with animals. Why? For sure. Because I like most animals more than I like people.
That is super fair. Super fair. I like it. So, yeah, I wonder what I would choose. All languages or animals? I think I would choose all languages because okay. I bet you there would be someone in my languages that would also be able to speak with animals. So then I get to know anyway.
Okay.
But also I kind of like the idea of the mystique of not knowing really what animals say. Although also it might be nice to know when they're upset or they're hurt and then right? they could tell us rather than spending thousands of dollars on diagnostic veterinary treatments.
See, that's what I think too. Recently becoming a dog owner, it would be nice if he could tell me like, hey, my tummy hurts.
Mommy, my tummy hurts. Yeah, fair enough. Okay, well, there we go. So, like I said at the top of this episode, Linnell is out of town and we batch record. So there's going to be a few episodes in a row where we are just going with Shereel. She's going to be our new BFF for the next couple releases. So I wanted to start off by talking to Shereel about her experience at the center so far and how that differs from her experience as working in other nonprofits. So we got you to introduce yourself a little bit at the top of the episode, but mm-hmm. tell us a bit more about like, how did you come to us? How did you find the Prince George Sexual Assault Center? Who are you?
Who am I? How did I find you? So I grew up in Prince George. I moved away about 16 years ago now to the sunny Okanagan, where I kind of bounced around doing different things. I actually used to be in radio for a little bit. And then I started with the nonprofit stuff. So I was actually in sports-related nonprofit, which was very enjoyable, but very, very different. So coming into this nonprofit, I don't even really know how to explain the difference. It's just, I mean, obviously the compassion that we have for the people that we help, the job that we do is obviously totally different.
So when we talk about like the difference of the sports world versus the kind of women's center nonprofit based programming that has a pretty strong need for funding and advertisement and, you know, all things that are conversations that we need to have versus sports. Can you comment on that? Not to dump on sports at all. We are big sports fans, but what would you say the differences you've noticed so far are?
I think one of the biggest ones is that, and like you say, not to knock sports at all, but much easier to get people to kind of support the sports, the young athletes, trying to get them to kind of move ahead in their athletic career is a little bit easier than trying to pitch the stuff that we do, obviously. I think the minute that sexual assault is mentioned in any form, it tends to make some people feel a little uncomfortable. So I think that's a big difference there. Like, it's just, you know, when it's for the children and it's for something fun, it's a lot easier to get the funding than when you're talking about serious stuff that's happening in our world today.
Why do you think that is? I mean, you mentioned being uncomfortable with the conversations, and I know we're both women that are in our, you know, middle stages of life. We're not, you know, 18-year-olds, and we're not at the ends of our careers by any stretch. So, I mean, being in the middle stages, being and becoming more comfortable with the conversations around sexual assault, why do you think it's hard to talk about?
I think, and eventually we're going to talk about this, I know, in another podcast, but I think a prime example is the whole man versus bear thing.
Right.
People just don't understand the need for what we do, I think. I think if it hasn't affected them, not that it's taboo, but just it's just harder for people to get behind something if they don't fully understand it. Whereas you understand sports, you understand, you know, kids wanting to exceed in the sports world and
yeah. Sports ball.
Yeah.
Ball, goal, win, people happy, pretty right. straightforward. Right. So I think maybe by what you're saying is like it's more of that linear success model, and there's a really like huge definition where you can say, I know that my funds are going towards the Cougars, let's say, and I know if they win, then my funds have gone somewhere. And there's this really kind of linear structure to what it means to donate to a sports team. Or right. I know that I'm going to donate and I'm going to see my name on jerseys, where I think what you mean too is like with working at a sexual assault center, there are no jerseys, that's there are right. no t-shirts, there is no sports ball to like
right.
have a beginning, middle, and end, that this is an ongoing process for people.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
You put that together very nicely in my brain. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So another question for you. Mm-hmm. When seeing as this is a new arena of work for you and it is different from what you've done in the past, like you said, you went from radio and television to sports nonprofits. What were your friends and family's reactions when you told them that you were coming to work at the center?
You know, it's probably not what you think it would be. I have, from the time I was a kid, wanted to have a career that was helping people. And not to say that my other jobs weren't helping people, but it's, I don't think it was really a shock to anybody, really. It was, I've always said, you know, like, I'm going to go back to school and I'm going to do this and I'm going to help change the world. And so I don't think it surprised anybody, really. I think it was like, okay, now's the time. You know, I'm in my 40s. It took me a little bit longer to figure out what I wanted to do, but this is definitely it. This is where I was meant to be.
Yeah, that's incredible. And we love having you here. I think you're amazing addition to our team. And it's been, as someone who's worked with you for the last year, it's been really cool to see you evolve and grow into your role, but also what you bring to the team, too. Like, you have an amazing sense of humor, but also in that, you bring that knowledge of working for other nonprofits. You bring that knowledge of fundraising, you bring that knowledge of understanding digital media and things that we've really been trying to push to bring the center more into the common conversation versus behind closed doors for basically what the old feminist guard was, the way they were operating for so long.
Right.
So, as a person who works with you, I very much appreciate you.
Well, and I very much appreciate you and Linnell and the rest of the team that we work with. It's a great team, and I think one of the biggest things about our team is that it's definitely a safe place So, you know, having the people be able to come to us and feel safe is something that at the end of the day, I know that I feel like I've done something good, right?
And yeah, you have. Oh. So I want to switch gears a little bit. So your title is the working as an Indigenous outreach person who works in remote communities. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that experience. I mean, we're not going to talk about the community maybe directly and the name and stuff, just because mm-hmm. we want to maintain the privacy of the yeah. folks we work with. However, like, what was it like going and having some of those first experiences where you were working?
Yeah, so I know as in any small community or any, even any little group that you try to go into, you kind of have to prove yourself a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So my first few trips going out to different communities was, I mean, everybody accepted me right off the bat. I didn't have any trouble that way. I think the biggest thing was on me and on what I was thinking it was going to look like when I went to these communities and then realizing that I was so far off. You know, you unfortunately, some of these smaller communities do have a lot of trauma and a lot of just constant bad news that's happening, and you don't blame them if they're not going to trust a new person in their community. But I have always been welcomed with open arms, no matter where I go. And they just want people to hear their voices. And I love being able to go and listen to their stories, whether they're, you know, traumatic stories or stories about living off the land or natural medicines. Like, so it has really been one of my favorite parts of this job.
It is pretty incredible being able to go up to the remote communities. I want to talk a little bit of, maybe we'll have a bit of a story time of some of, like, how was it to actually get there, like physically get from Prince George to the communities we go to? I know you've had some pretty interesting experiences. Can you touch on that just so that people understand how remote is for us and for the work that you're doing?
Right. So first of all, you're going on what I consider to be a tiny plane. I know that there are much smaller ones, but we fly in an 18-seater. It can be real, real bumpy. The last few times that I've been out there, it has been extremely bumpy, where you almost feel like you're at the fair on a ride, just, you know, bouncing around. The pilots, you get to know the pilots because it's usually the same ones for those kind of flights, and they are always lovely. One of the things that plays a huge role in us getting to those communities is obviously the weather. And there have been times when we have flown all the way to where we're supposed to land and had to turn around and come all the way back to PG. So
you just did a drive-by. So you, like, went up in the plane and you're like, everything's great, maybe kind of bumpy. And then you go to land and you're like, whoop, we're getting there, we're starting our workday. And then maybe not, just kidding. Right.
And I know that teases the people that are on the ground waiting for our arrival too, because right. they hear us, sometimes they actually see us, and then it's like, just kidding, and we're headed back this direction. So yeah, all sorts of things affect our trips out there, whether it be weather. Some of the drives out there are crazy. A lot of the communities are just like old dirt logging road types that in the wintertime, it's great when they're, if you can believe that, like, to have ice on the road is actually makes it more like highway driving. Whereas in the summertime, something might look like a teeny tiny little hole, and the next thing you know, your whole front tire has gone missing in this said hole.
So there's a tire monster lurking beneath. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And so what kind of vehicles do you take up there that it makes it so challenging? Like, are you taking a car, or what does that look like for you folks?
Usually it's a pickup truck.
Oh, so we're really gobbling tires.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well then.
Yeah.
I mean, I should probably know that working with you, but we'll just, you know, we'll just assume that everything will be okay and you won't have to drive until the winter again.
Right? Yes.
Right? Maybe?
Yes.
So, like, tell me more about some of the work that you do in some of these places, because I'm sure our audience wants to know, like, when you're there, obviously you come in on the plane, you're doing your thing, you're helping people, but what is kind of a work day look like and some of maybe the types of conversations that you might have as a support person up there?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not a lot different than what is done at our center in town. People, I have an open door in most of the band offices, even at the schools, for people to just pop in and chat if they need to. It's also about just making those relationships with the folks, you know, like visiting their stores or, you know, going into their schools or the band office and just saying, like, hey, I'm Shreel and I'm from the Sexual Assault Center and I would love to chat with you and get to know you and hear your stories. And it's not all sad, trauma-based conversations. A lot of it is just getting to know them and actually becoming like a part of their community, becoming that regular face that they see, and just that acceptance for them to be comfortable to come to myself or our colleague Amber that goes out there quite a bit too, and just knowing that, you know, we have no plans in leaving them anytime soon. We want to be staying there for as long as we can and just continue to build those relationships and be accepted in their community, which did happen quite easily because, like I said, they are super lovely human beings and it's just...
Just people are people are people.
Yeah.
You pass the respect out and people pass it back. And maybe then it is a sports ball analogy.
Yeah.
Just passing the kindness back
that's
and forth.
That's true, rather Kendra. Than the ball. That's so good.
Look at us go.
Yes.
Excellent. We're like making plans and coming up with analogies tonight.
Yeah.
No, that's perfect. I think it's really great that you found such a connection in the communities that you go up and visit and that you're able to be accepted and that people really have welcomed you with open arms. I think that's a testament, again, not just trying to butter you up, but who you are as an individual. I think that speaks to volumes about who you are and how you move through the world, which is really fantastic. And I think that ties in too with you coming into this career later, like just later in life. And I kind of maintain that, or the statistics are that we go through something like 7 careers before we settle on one or something like that. I can't remember the exact stats. So really, you found your 7th and you're here and you're going to hopefully rock it for a while.
I hope so.
Yeah, I don't want to get rid of you. I like you too much.
I don't want to leave anytime soon, so.
Yeah, so we're moving to what you're doing now. So you still are doing the Indigenous outreach piece kind of off the side, or every few weeks you're going into the community. Mm-hmm. So tell me about your role in the clinic, or how that is impacting you, like the expectation, or because it's a fairly new position for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So since it is so new, I don't have a ton to talk about on that, but you know, it's very exciting news for our center to have gotten the go-ahead and the funding to have a clinic in our building is just, I think, going to be fantastic. And so right now it's just kind of like the familiarizing myself with, you know, what is a clinic going to look like when it's open? Like, what are we going to be able to offer to everybody? So for now, the job that I have been doing on that side of things has just been like a lot of reading, a lot of research, a lot of, you know, finding out what other communities have been doing that have the same kind of setup as what we will have, and just kind of learning, because, I mean, this is obviously very very new and something that I have never, ever done before. So, but I'm super excited about it.
To set something up from the ground up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right now you're building the foundation of just talking to folks and figuring out, because I think Linnell and I talked about this in a past episode, that we were awarded one of the clinics in the province where the MPSSG, which is the Solicitor General's Office, Public Safety and Solicitor General's Office, gave us some dollars to open a forensic clinic. And in that forensic clinic, we will be able to do forensic exams, so sexual assault exams for any person. We'll be able to do police interviews, which we already do, but we have a police interview room and it's going to be acknowledged in a different way through that setting. We are still offering all of our regular services. You just get these lovely add-ons. So basically what's happening is we're building this space from the ground up. So imagine, like, for the audience, imagine like building a doctor's office almost. Mm-hmm. And so we need to do that. So if anyone out there is listening and you happen to have a bed, a forensic bed, like a stretcher or a doctor's table, mm-hmm. we'd love that. Yes, we'd love please. That for us, because those things are to get, but not to dwell on cost, but those things are really expensive. It's like $15,000 to get one of those gurneys that you see at the hospital. It's bananas.
Right.
And so we're looking at things like that. And Sheryl, part of her job is going to be sourcing a lot of that stuff out and figuring right. out what you need, what you don't need, where it's going to go in our building, how that's going to work, how we're going to make it warm and comfy for folks to access, and not and make it relevant for the medical mm-hmm. professionals that are going to be in our space as well.
That's right. Yeah. And I think, you know, not to say anything terrible about the hospital that we have here, because the hospital in Prince George does amazing things for a bunch of people, but you need that privacy. You need that safe space when something like a sexual assault happens to you. You don't want to go to a place where there are a ton of people waiting that can hear you talking to the check-in person. Like, you want it to be safe and quiet. And I think that that's what we're shooting for, is just to make sure that above all else, people are going to feel incredibly safe coming to us.
That's a really, really valid point and way to lay that out, because safety is our ultimate goal. So not only for the education that we do and the conversations that you have when you're doing wearing your other hat in community, but also with this clinic, is we want to make sure that folks have that comfortable and welcoming space so they can not only feel safe in themselves, but safe in their surroundings.
Right.
Because we're asking folks at their most vulnerable time to come to a unknown space with really no knowledge of what they're walking in the door, other than they know they need to have a forensic exam done, or they know they want to learn about it. And then we're asking them to be really vulnerable in our space.
That's right. Yeah.
It's interesting to think about this model and the clinic, because we're the only sexual assault center, or dedicated sexual assault center, north of Kamloops. And right. so Kamloops has the next closest clinic, which is awesome. And so we're looking at a huge demographic of people potentially accessing our services. And if someone now wanted to access us, how what would that look like for a person? We don't have, keeping in mind, folks out there, that we don't have the forensic clinic on site yet. That's to be continued, but we have almost everything else in space. So can you walk our audience through what it would look like if they needed to contact us at this point, if something terrible happened to them and they were unfortunately sexually assaulted and they needed support from the center?
Yeah, so first and foremost, they are welcome to come to our office right now. During office hours, unfortunately. So 8:30 to 4:30, Monday to Friday, they can feel free to come in during that time. We do have our 24/7 helpline, so they can feel free to call that. Calling that number, you know, we've got the outreach right now for people that need it. And we also are assisting people at the hospital should they choose that that's the route they want to go until we have the clinic open. We will, we have no problems to sit with them and hold their hand if need be and just comfort them and try and make them feel as safe as possible, even when they have to do the scary things like go to the hospital.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We want to make sure that people have that full unfettered access and that ability to be able to connect with us no matter where they are and what their walk of life is. And we also have, I think it's relevant for folks to know, we also work with U-Ride in town. So if someone isn't able to get to our space, we can arrange for a ride to either meet you at the clinic or meet you at the hospital and then get you home at the end of the day, because we know that that's a huge barrier to access, especially in the north. Like, that's something that we've really tried to circumnavigate, the potential loss of ability to access, especially in the colder months, mm-hmm. because no one needs to be walking outside. We know what time of day or night, I should say, most mm-hmm. assaults happen. And a lot of folks need out and they need to get to a space. And so if someone's accessing us and they're calling our 1-800 number or 1-866 number, we are able to meet them at the center with using that number or meet them at the hospital. And so what happens is a person calls in, they get patched through our line. That line then goes directly to myself, Linnell, or our children's counselor, Asia, at this point. And from there, we get to ask the person what their need is at that point in time. And with that need, they get to say, okay, I'd like to come meet you at the clinic, or I'd like to go to the hospital and meet you there. And so it's really the survivor or the victim gets to drive the bus and giving that agency back to folks so that they can have choices. Because it's not, like Shereel said, it's not about taking away from the hospital at this point. It's about adding another option for folks in our community, especially right. folks that are coming to our community and may not know what else to do.
Right. That's right. And I mean, and I'm sure you've mentioned it before, but a really great thing with us too is that you never need a referral to come and see us, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. We never need a referral. It's all for free. We will never ask you to pay us. Mm-hmm. So if by chance someone out there wants to duplicate our services and call themselves PGSAC and are charging money, that's not us. We don't want money in that, from that kind of pay fee for service model. That's just not what we're about. Right. And so we're trying to make it as no or low barrier as possible. And so folks, we are getting to the end here. And so I don't want us to get cut off. We like to keep it short to half an hour. Shereel may or may not know that because that's just what we do. And so to wrap up today, what is a message you want to pass on to folks who might need to access your services or our services at the center, or any sort of message you want to pass on to our listeners? They are going to hear you for the next couple episodes. So is there any pearls of wisdom you want to impart on them?
Pearls of wisdom. I don't know so much if I have any pearls of wisdom, but one thing that I would love to share with our community is that we will always be there for you if and when you need us. So you know, we want to make you feel safe. We're there to help you through what is probably the hardest thing that you have ever gone through. And we want to be there for you while you're going through that struggle. And yeah, I think safety is just the biggest thing that we want to tell people, is that you're safe with us when you need us.
I think that's a wonderful pearl of wisdom. I don't know what you're talking about not having one. So we'll wrap it up there and we'll talk to you next time, folks. And we have some interesting episodes coming up, some interesting conversations, and we will see you in the next one.